Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Jeff Currier, and he'll be answering your most important questions on tigerfish in Tanzania. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Jeff a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address on the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Jeff Currier about tigerfish in Tanzania. Tonight's show is sponsored by Rail Riders. Why is Rail Riders adventure clothing fast becoming the favorite of fly fishing enthusiasts worldwide? Simple answer, because they expect their clothing to always be up to the task. Rail Riders delivers in a big, satisfying way. Its award-winning collection of technical apparel is tough, quick-drying, lightweight, and comfortable, ideal for fresh water or salt. Whether it's chasing steelhead on an uncrowded river or hunting elusive bonefish along warm flats, Rail Riders will make the catch of the day even more enjoyable. Rail Riders make the toughest clothes on the planet. And here tonight is a special offer from Rail Riders. Their first purchase you make with them, if you use code RRAF, that's RRAF, when checking out on their website or over the phone, you'll get 15% off the first order. So go to www.railriders.com, that's RAILRIDERS.com, or call them at 1-800-437-3794. That's 1-800-437-3794. Use the discount code RRAF, and you'll get 15% off your first order. Before we introduce Jeff, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. And on our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. And so there's two chances there for you to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under Jeff's section that says, click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners. We will also be giving away a pair of Rail Riders Extreme Adventure Pants, the toughest pair of fly fishing pants on the market. These are synthetic and super tough reinforced seat and knees, good pocket design and articulated knees. Velcro and elastic cuffs are invaluable for staying put under waders, and they also prove to be the best wading pant on the market. So, believe it or not, I'm actually wearing a pair of these right now. They're very comfortable. I wear them around the house. But here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer the question at the end of the show. The question is going to be something that Jeff and I talk about tonight during the show. You've got to submit your answer along with your name and your location in the text box on our homepage. So listen closely and use your best typing skills and see if you can't win that pair of Extreme Adventure pants. Our guest tonight is Jeff Currier. Jeff does it all as a teacher, author, artist, guide, industry operative, and international travel, just to name a few. Jeff has had over 30 years' experience in fly fishing. He used to manage all the fishing operations at the Jack Dennis Fly Shop in Jackson, Wyoming, and did that for many years. He also guided in the waters around Yellowstone, led fly fishers to exotic destinations around the globe, and he has taken over 160 kinds of fish on a fly rod in fresh water and salt in over 30 countries. In the winter months, he can be found traveling throughout the U.S., demonstrating and lecturing about virtually all aspects of fly fishing. When he's not traveling, Jeff is writing or painting. His watercolors of fish are in high demand, and his articles and photography have appeared in magazines, books, catalogs, and brochures. He's also appeared on television on Fishing the West, In Search of Fly Water, Real Adventures, and Fly Fishing TV. He's authored Currier's Quick and Easy Guide to Saltwater Fly Fishing and Currier's Quick and Easy Guide to Warmwater Fly Fishing. As a member of the Team USA, Jeff led the Americans to their first ever top 10 finish in the 2003 World Fly Fishing Championship in Spain. Notably, he was the bronze medalist in that competition, the first time a North American has ever medaled in the World Fly Fishing Competition. This is Jeff's fourth time on our show. The first interview we did with Jeff was on European nymphing techniques. The second was on Nile perch. The third was on the Mahseer in India. And if you'd like to listen to any of those programs, you can find them all in our archive. Well, Jeff, thanks for joining us. Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and welcome back.
It's a pleasure, as always.
Yeah, well, sorry for the rough start there, but we're on, and that's the important thing. So.
Yeah, no worries.
Well, I'm glad you're back safe. I'm sure you have some stories to tell, as you always do.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm sure we'll get to those during the course of the evening. So let's, you know, of course, this is not a fish or a location that most of us are familiar with, so we'll have to have you fill in the details here. And let's just start out by talking about tigerfish as a fish. And first of all, where did you first hear about tigerfish as a sport fish?
Well, I probably knew about it almost my whole life because just that McLean's encyclopedia was kicking around when I was a little kid, and they are in there.
Ah.
And the painting of them in there is one that if you're like 8 years old, that's all you want is tigerfish. Well, I never thought I'd ever actually catch one because when you're that age, Africa is like this place, you know, in some fairy tale. You're never going to go, and it doesn't really exist. But then you get older, and you realize it does, and you start fishing for all kinds of weird stuff, and next thing you know, it comes up on the list. You got to go have one.
Now, when did you decide to actually go after them in this trip? Or did you fish for them in Egypt, too, when you were there?
Yeah, I've actually fished for them in Egypt a few times. You know, you go there for Nile perch, and then you discover the tigerfish there, and they are really nice ones there and a lot of fun to catch. But my wife and I, in 2005, you know, we dedicated 2.5 months to catching tigerfish, and we actually kind of hitched and bussed our way across Africa, starting in Namibia and went all the way almost to Mozambique, following the Zambezi River the whole way. So we have, you know, quite a bit of experience fishing tigers on the Zambezi, and also on that trip we went into the Okavango Delta and caught tigerfish there as well.
Okay. What is a tigerfish? Describe it for us. I know we got a picture on the website with its teeth hanging out, but can you compare it to anything else?
Yeah, I mean, they're definite relatives of piranhas. I mean, this hemisphere got the piranhas and that hemisphere got the tigerfish. They are quite a bit different in appearance. You know, your piranhas are more bluegill-shaped or bass-shaped. They both have very similar teeth, though. The tigerfish is more elongated like a trout or a salmon, but just daggers. And what they both have is not only the teeth, though, is they have adipose fins. You know, the southern hemisphere didn't get any trout or salmon, but they got these ferocious fish that maybe they think they're trout on steroids or something. But just a toothy fish like the piranha.
Cool, cool. Now, how big do they get? And what was the biggest one you caught
there? Well, there's a few different species of tigerfish. You know, like a lot of our fish in this continent have different families and different species are the same. It's the same there. And, you know, it was once thought that tigerfish got up to about, you know, 15 pounds because the most common tigerfish are the ones found in Okavango Delta and the Zambezi River. But there's also a tigerfish in the Congo called the Goliath tiger, and he is believed to get up to 100 pounds. I want one bad someday. The one we just fished for was at first thought to be a Zambezi tigerfish, but it now is its own tigerfish. And by the way, it was only really documented for the first time in 2008, and it is the Tanzania tigerfish. And it gets up to, well, I don't think they're 100% sure because nobody's been fishing for it that long, but their biggest yet out of the camp I was just at is 26 pounds, which is just huge when you think about people have been fishing Zambezi tigers for a long time, and a 15-pounder is almost unheard of.
Right, right. Good. Well, it looks like we answered Joe's question. I want to give him credit. He's from Luxembourg, so that's actually not too far away from him over there. But he was asking about that Goliath tigerfish and that it appears to be bigger than the others, so I think he just kind of clarified that for him. We have a question from Jason Hurst in western Pennsylvania, and he says, though tigerfish seems like an interesting species and one I probably will never get to fish for, the travel and access part of that world is more difficult than the fishing. He says, but are these fish similar to pike or muskie fishing here in the States or closer to saltwater species?
They would be closer to a saltwater species, and the reason for that, you know, having a lot of pike experience too, is they tend to take off and fight a lot harder. You know, pike will put on a pretty good fight for, you know, the first 30 seconds, and, you know, within 4 minutes you got them in. A big tigerfish, the initial surge is absolutely incredible. It reminds me of hooking a big saltwater fish, like a big snapper or a grouper, because it's really hard to stop them in that initial attack your fly. And then, you know, the battle the whole way in is incredible. It's like fighting a little tarpon all the way in. So definitely saltwater.
Ah, yeah, strong fish, it sounds like. Yeah.
Very impressive.
Yeah. So you were in Tanzania this time. Where in the world, for us that haven't been there, is Tanzania in relationship to the continent of Africa?
Yeah, Tanzania is on the east side of Africa. In fact, it's one of the countries that borders the Indian Ocean. It is directly south of Kenya and directly north of Mozambique, which are also both on the east coast of Africa. And then if you jumped over the western border of Tanzania, you would have Lake Tanganyika and on the other side, the Congo, and even a little bit of Malawi nearby there, too. So it's a pretty cool place.
Now, why did you pick Tanzania?
Well, it wasn't so much just me that picked it. It was a Confluence film project. And the producers, Chris Patterson and Jim Klug, I've known them for a long time, and they've known that I was, you know, seeking exotic fish all the time, and they thought it'd be a cool segment to their upcoming movie. These guys did Drift and Rise. They're working on a third, which I think will be called Connect. Anyway, they thought I might have a good idea for a real exotic part, and I said, let's go to Africa and catch some tigerfish. I have a little experience with them. We can probably do it. And, of course, you know, I've caught a lot of the Zambezi tigers and the Egyptian tigers, so we thought we'd try to find some a little bigger. And these real neat guys from South Africa, their business is called Tourette Fishing Fight It in Africa. And I have links for all this stuff on my blog. I'm sure we'll get to that later tonight. But these guys are the ones that discovered these new species of tigerfish in 2008 in Tanzania. Somehow we started talking to these guys, and next thing you know, we pieced together this trip to go, you know, document and film these new tigers. And, God, I'm glad we did, because it was just unbelievable.
So what waters did you actually fish there?
We fished, first of all, I'll tell you where it was in Tanzania. It was
okay.
We basically got on a plane out of Dar es Salaam, which is the capital of Tanzania, and flew kind of southwest. So we were getting pretty close to the border, the western border of Tanzania. And there's two rivers there, the Manira and the Ruji River. I probably pronounced them a little wrong, but I actually do know how to spell them. And we were camped on both of those rivers, you know, half on one river, half on the other of the trip. And both rivers have huge tiger fish, and they both flow for about 40 kilometers before they bump into one another.
Wow, wow. And are these big rivers? I mean,
not
what would
so
you compare
big
it to, you know, like in the U.S.? Or?
Yeah, not so big. I would say they're only about as wide as, let's say, a little wider than maybe the Madison or the Missouri River in Montana. Those would be a good description. But they're quite a bit deeper. African rivers tend to be narrow and deep. And when I say deep, I'm not talking 30 or 40 feet by any means, but they were easily 8 to 15 feet in some of the deeper pools.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Peter in Costa Rica asks if there's any other sport fish found in those waters besides tigers that you would target.
Well, they have some pretty aggressive catfish in most of the African rivers. One is the sharp-toothed catfish, and one is the bundu. And I've caught sharp-toothed sunfly many times, but on this trip, even though they were there, we did not see them. And the other catfish, the bundu, is one I've always wanted to catch. He doesn't take the fly very well, but, you know, people fish for him with bait, and they get huge, up to 100 pounds. But I've seen a few big ones of those. There's also some fish called a bream, which there's probably 100 species of bream in Africa. We didn't see any in these rivers, and Tourette guys said that there's probably not any bream in these rivers, which is unusual because most rivers in Africa that I fished have them.
So bream is a freshwater fish? Is it also a saltwater fish? Is a fish by
there? Yep, there are saltwater bream, too. These
okay.
guys are
okay.
These guys are their own deal. And there is another. I can't believe I forgot. There's yellowfish in these rivers that we were in, and we got to catch some. In fact, I caught one that has not been documented in textbooks yet. We took a fin clip, and hopefully we'll have a new species here soon documented.
Oh, cool. So we're not at 160 anymore, maybe 161 or 2 or 3, huh?
Actually, your bio was a little old. We're probably about 260 now.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah,
we better fix that up. Get that updated. Robert in North Carolina wants to know how the fishing compared there for the tigerfish compared to the Zambezi in the Congo, I guess is what he's saying, in Zambia,
well,
the Congo.
This was as good as I think it gets. I mean, we literally caught 20 to 40 fish a day, and that was, you know, really not with a whole lot of effort to get numbers. We were really in search of big ones. So I'm sure we passed over some smaller fish and caught a little less but caught bigger. Zambezi is a great river. I haven't been there in its prime time. I've been there toward the end of its season, and it was good, but honestly, it was nothing like what I saw in Tanzania. The only thing that was close is I've had a couple of good days in the Okavango Delta in Botswana where we caught maybe 30 or 40 tiger fish, but these Tanzanian ones, they're so much bigger, it's really incredible.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we need to take a quick break here, Jeff, but when we come back, we'll talk with you more about tiger fish in Tanzania. The Platte River Fly Shop in Casper, Wyoming features a first-class website covering all aspects of fly fishing the tailwaters of the North Platte River, including up-to-date local fishing reports, fly patterns, guide services, and online shopping for top-of-the-line gear for any travel destination. The Platte River Fly Shop provides a professional guide staff for the Blue Ribbon, Trophy, Gray Reef, and Miracle Mile sections of the North Platte River. Visit their extensive website at www.wyotrout.com. That's wyotrout.com. Or you could call them at 1-307-237-5997. That's 1-307-237-5997. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Jeff Currier about tiger fish in Tanzania. If you'd like to ask Jeff a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, Jeff, I know things have changed since you were on our show last because you were working at Jack Dennis. Now you're off on your own and doing your thing. So tell us a little bit about what's been going on in your fly fishing world.
Well, you know, I left the fly shop to pursue my art. I think I can become a better artist by having more time. And I'm hosting a few trips each year. I'll probably, you know, eventually be hosting this one to Africa, actually. Hopefully next year I'll get back with a group of people. And doing a lot more speaking and lecturing. I'm working for the Fly Fishing Show now, and I do a lot of independent stuff for clubs and Trout Unlimited banquet type stuff, and I love doing that. I got to say, the only place I've really failed is that I have not been doing as much art as I would like to be because I've been fishing too much. You know, I think home, you know, you should be doing your art, and if somebody picks up the phone and says, hey, let's go to the South Fork, or these opportunities to travel keep coming along, and I keep taking them. So I haven't learned the discipline yet, but what the heck? I'm only 45.
Life is for having fun anyway. It sounds like you're having some fun. So, yeah, yeah. And you said you want to tell people about your, give you out your website address and so forth so they can keep track of what you're up to?
Absolutely. You can follow me. I keep what I think anyway is a really good blog. I literally have documented every single day of fishing I've had since I left the shop last October 25th. And you can go to my website, jeffcurrier.com. Got to spell the last name right, C-U-R-R-I-E-R. And go halfway down the page, and you'll see my blog. And the website's got all kind of good stuff. Usually doesn't change too much. But click on that blog, and for instance, you could go back to October 28th, the day I left my driveway, and I document every single day of fishing in Africa, you know, some of the stories that went along with it, and I have a lot of photographs. And in the stories, there are links. I mentioned the other guys that were on the trip. Jim Klug, he's an incredible photographer. That, in fact, the picture on your website is one of his, I believe, and you can go to his site, Klug Photos, and see photos from the trip, and it will just stun you. Really beautiful stuff. It'll get you fired up and ready for this movie, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that'll be anxious to see that when it comes out. Any estimated release date on that movie yet, or still?
Yep. Yeah? Almost certain it'll be around November 1st, 2011, you know, possibly that last week of October, and the first showing will be in Bozeman, Montana. Mm-hmm. And then it will probably travel around with some of the fly fishing shows. And I know they showed it, their movies in Jackson, Wyoming, so they'll probably go there and other fly fishing town destinations throughout the country.
Yeah,
a lot of fun to go to those, see it on the big screen.
Yeah, yeah, I bet that's going to be nice. I know the other two movies that they created were very good and well worth the watch. Okay, good. Well, thanks for catching us up. And let's get back to tiger fish here. Let's talk about, you told us how the expedition kind of came about as, you know, a film adventure, so to speak. But what did you have to do to prepare for this trip? I know you do a lot of research and stuff, and I know you'd researched tiger fish before, but what did you do special for this trip and, you know, in preparation?
Well, I got to tell you, when you go this far and you have to produce for a camera, you make sure all your knots are good. That's the first thing I do. I feel it down to the bare bone. I'll test the drags on my reels, and then I'll start fastening everything back together. And, you know, biminis to loops on fly lines and semi twist from the butt of the leader to the loop on the fly line, and you know, I'm not going to lose a fish because of stupidity, and that happens right here in Victor, Idaho. And then, you know, you got to do a little research, you know, on what the weather's going to be like and make sure you get the right clothes and is it going to be buggy and never forget that sunscreen. It's kind of a routine for me. You know, I go a lot of places that are similar to this, so it's not as hard as it used to be. But someone going the first time, it's nice to look at a list for sure and start building that list from going through the internet and learning about your destinations.
Did you put anything like that up on your website?
You know, I haven't, but I think I should.
That might be a good thing for people. Yeah,
absolutely. When people go on my trips, I definitely throw a list at them, so maybe I'll throw that up there.
Yeah.
Good idea. Maybe that's a blog thing this week, but I don't get to fish one day.
There you go. Now, did you have to do any more research on the fish or talk to folks over there before you went to try to get a handle on what you'd be up against?
I did. You know, a tiger fish essentially is a tiger fish, but I knew that these ones were larger than normal, and I also didn't really know what the rivers looked like, whether it be a bunch of whitewater or something. And they actually did have a rapid, which in that case, you know, I had to go a little heavier with my leaders. And because these tigers are bigger than the tigers in the Zambezi, I went with stronger wire. I ended up fishing 30-pound wire. The real wire that's knotable worked really good on these fish. And so, I did have to do some research. I went back and forth with the Torek guys, Googled stuff on my own. But, you know, it was a fish that's only been discovered for a few years, so there wasn't much on the Internet. I had to count on our South African friends, who they were right on.
So these South Africans, did they work as guides for you there and also host you there? What was their role?
Yeah, I should mention Keith Clover and Rob Scott. These are like adventure South African fly fishermen. These guys are really cool and really fun, and they're the ones that found this place. They fished the Zambezi, guided the Zambezi, and same with the Okavango Delta. It was their lifelong quest to catch a 20-pound tiger fish. And I think they both got fish around 15 pounds. And somebody was hunting in Tanzania and saw these rivers and saw a local with a 20-pound-plus tiger. And these guys literally got on a plane, went to Dar es Salaam, and took a train out to the water and got a boat there. And they discovered these fish and immediately decided they were going to get, you know, somehow put together a camp. So I fished with those two guys. Keith, actually, he's out at Johannesburg these days booking the trips, but he gets up there once in a while to do a little guiding. And then Rob and this guy, Leonard Fleming, who was one of the guides, also South African, is who we fished with. And they were our host and guides, and they, I'll tell you what, they run a great show. They looked after us like I've never been looked after before. It was awesome.
What kind of accommodations did you have there?
We had tents, and they were right on the river, but they're, you know, you're not sleeping in a pup tent or anything on the ground. You're on a kind of a nice African-style tent. Is on a wood platform up off the ground a little so you don't get too many creepy crawlers on you. And you don't have a bathroom or anything, but it's just a short walk out to your elevated bathroom off the ground, too. And you don't have to, this time of year, you don't have to worry about rain or anything, so you're just kind of chilling out there. Really nice.
What was the temperature like there?
Hot.
Hot.
Africa in general, if you're in the tiger fishing areas, it's always going to be about 95 to 100 degrees during the day. And nights probably get down in the upper 70s, low 80s. It's hot. You got to be prepared for it.
Yeah. And did you fish mostly from boats or the shore or both? What was your approach there?
All African fishing is mostly from boats because of hippos and crocodiles. We had a few exceptions where I would have to say, you know, we hit a really good spot and we got, if anything, careless because you're walking along the edge of the river. And, you know, you don't think much about crocodiles. You don't think it'll be you, but it can be you. And the crocodiles we saw on these rivers, I mean, these are the ones that eat zebras whole. So most of the fishing's in a boat. A couple times we got stupid, but I wouldn't advise that.
Yeah, it seems to I've read a lot of articles about not fishing in Africa, but just, you know, people and living there and so forth. And a lot of women get attacked just going down to get water, you know. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I guess. And they live there all the time, you know. So certainly people like us probably aren't aware as much as we'd like to be about those kind of dangers. Did you see any hippos there as well? Or?
We did. You know, we didn't see a ton of them. And on the Zambezi and the Okavango, you see them all the time, and it's kind of spooky. But here we saw hippos every day, but very few big pods of them. And we didn't have too many problems. We did have one hit our camera boat one day, he was a little aggravated. I don't know if he hit it on purpose or by accident when he's trying to get away, but it still scares the heck out of you. And we had our last day when I got a big tiger, I got an 18-pounder. We did it by floating the rapids in a rubber raft. We knew, well, Rob and Keith knew where the hippos were, they thought, and they were there, but they were also in a pool, and we had to go by one mad hippo in a rubber raft. And I was a little scared. I have enormous respect for hippos, big time.
They have a big mouth.
They do. Teeth, even though there's not many in there, they're about 8 inches to a foot long, and they are very sharp. They've killed a lot of people. It's funny, you ask people what the most dangerous animal in Africa is, and half say hippos, half say, you know, crocodiles. The bottom line is they're all dangerous if you're not careful.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Dr. Mike Abramowitz wrote in, and I don't know that you know about this or not, but I'll ask a question anyway, and if you can shed any light on it. He says there's a disease, a couple of diseases out there, Ilharzias and Schistosomiasis, and I'm probably destroying those names, but and he says they're common in many lakes and rivers in part of Africa and can be acquired by even handling wet line. And he asks if you had any concerns about those kind of diseases, you know, just dealing with the water and so forth in those African streams.
I'm familiar with, you know, I think the way you pronounce it, and I can't pronounce it either. I think you get it, it's like a worm or a fluke that you can get from something to do with snails. In any case, I've heard about it, and I probably should worry about it, and unfortunately I don't. I'm a little irresponsible. I will do anything to go catch fish, whether it's a civil war or a bad disease or something. So I didn't think about that too much. I do get my yellow fever shots and my hepatitises and stuff like that, whatever my travel doctor tells me. But that one, I didn't prepare for, so hopefully I'm okay.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about food, flies, equipment, and so forth. Walter Dinkins in Wilmington, North Carolina. Exactly what did you see as the primary food source for the tigerfish? Did you examine any stomachs, or did you need to do that? So what are the primary and secondary food sources for these fish?
You know, I wanted to eat a tigerfish because I never have, but we never did kill one, so I did not look in a stomach. However, Rob, Keith, and Leonard, they're pretty sure that their main food is a fish called a red barb. And, you know, a little, kind of like a shiner, if you know what a shiner is. He's probably 6 to 8 inches long, and they're abundant. You see him, you actually see him rising on the river. And it was my theory this trip when I saw him rising, the tigers weren't very hungry, which makes sense if they're up on the surface having a good time. And when you didn't see the barbs, you better be ready. But there's also, plenty of yellowfish, those catfish. I'm sure tigers pretty much eat anything they want. And even big stuff, from looking at their mouths, I bet that they sometimes might even work in groups of two or three and, you know, hit a two-foot-long catfish and break them in two and eat the pieces.
Yeah, yeah. Walter also had another question. He says that he would imagine large 2-0, 2-0, 3-0 baitfish imitations, like he said he used in the White Nile when he was fishing for large Nile perch. Is that the kind of fly you were using for the tigers here?
Yep, 2 and 3-0 flies are best. The most important thing with tigers is that your hook is sharp. When you look at the pictures of these fish, their mouth, number one, has so many teeth that there's, you know, the teeth almost get in the way of where your hook may be able to perch in the mouth. And then those few spots that don't have a tooth in the way are very, very hard. You know, I'd have to say that it's kind of like trying to hook a tarpon. That can be really difficult. Well, tigerfish can be difficult, too. It's essential that you strip set about 3 times as soon as you feel that fish. And if it's a big fish, that's great because he's going to go the other way and you're going to get a good hard set into him as he goes away from you and then just let go of the line and hit him a couple times with the rod. But the smaller fish, like if you had a fish under 8 pounds, a lot of times they would come towards you and make one jump and spit the fly because you just couldn't drive that hook into him.
Mm. Okay. So what kind of flies did you tie? Would describe some of the, or did you tie them, or did you go with flies that the South African guides had, or what did you do?
Yeah, it kind of shocks people. I'm not a big tire. I can do it, but from working in the fly shop for 20-something years, I have so many flies I don't know what to do with sometimes. The flies that worked best for these fish were kind of the Enrico Puglisi flies. They're kind of a synthetic minnow-looking thing with big eyes. We did with black and purples, black and reds, also big clouser minnows, you know, size 2-0 clousers. The one thing I'll tell you, though, the synthetic flies stay together a little better, whereas if you had bucktail or something, the tigers just shave it in half, and it doesn't last too long because of their teeth.
OK. And so you just brought those along with you?
Yeah, I brought them along, and also the South African guys. You know, these guys had a lot of flies, too, and they immediately were generous enough to share their flies that worked good for them over the years with us. But it's funny, I had a couple flies that, you know, really knocked them out. There's kind of almost like a jig. A friend of mine, Brent Dawson, ties them out of California. And, you know, when you have to get down deep, it's hard to beat his flies. They are really excellent. And, yeah, I showed that fly to the South Africans, and they thought it was pretty cool. As long as I didn't hit anybody in the head with it, it was okay.
Yeah. We have a couple of questions here, one from Peter in Costa Rica. And he's asking about topwater flies like poppers and so forth. And then also online here, I just got a question from Rod in Amarillo. And he says, it's my experience too. He says, a lot of the rivers you see on TV in Africa appear to be muddy or highly discolored. So he's asking about topwater poppers or scented flies. First of all, was the river discolored and muddy? Is that what you were dealing with?
Nope, it wasn't. These were surprisingly clear. In fact, even the Zambezi is pretty clear when you're there at the right season. You know, Africa has a tremendous rainy season. If you get caught up in that, you're going to be in trouble because the rivers will come up, you know, sometimes 10 feet, I'm sure, and it'll be muddy. But if you go at the right time, these rivers will have at least 3 or 4 feet visibility, I would say, these ones that we fished the last couple weeks. So topwater was an option. In fact, you could fish poppers. I can think of a pool right in front of the camp. You could have fished a popper or a crease fly, and the tigers would have gone wild. The problem is most of those tigers would have been your, you know, 4 to 8 pounders, which normally, if I was on the Zambezi, I'd be tickled pink with 8-pound tigers all day. But when you're in Tanzania, you're looking for fish over 10 pounds, and they don't seem to come to the surface very well.
Okay. Did they, we got another question in here from Joe online, and he's asking about, you had mentioned the shape, like the Puglisi shape flies. He's asking about color, too. Is there any particular colors that worked best for you?
Yeah, the black and red was very good for us. In fact, I'd have to say it was the best almost by a long shot. Maybe we used it most of the time. I mean, there's no doubt we did, but we caught a lot of fish on black and red.
Another question off the internet, David Schull in Dallas. He says, what methods are typically used for tiger fish? Were you able to sight fish for them?
You know, we talked about sight fishing, and the Toret guys do a little sight fishing in unusual circumstances, but we never got to do any. I'm sure we probably could have when we fished the rapids, but we were really short on time, and we had the hippo problem, so it wasn't something that we were able to investigate that time.
Okay. Okay, well, we'll talk more about your tactics here and strategies here in a minute. We do have to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll do just that. So hang tight. Royal Gorge Anglers is a full-service fly shop on the Arkansas River in Canyon City, Colorado. They provide both walk, wade, and float fishing guide service on the Arkansas, South Platte, and several private high country ranches. They specialize in fly fishing education and work to assure that everyone taking a trip leaves a better fly fisher. For the best service and the most fun in Southern Rockies, visit the folks at Royal Gorge Anglers, the gateway to Southern Colorado. Located conveniently on US 50, only 45 minutes from Colorado Springs. For more information, visit their website at www.royalgorgeanglers.com. That's royalgorgeanglers.com. Or call them at 888-994-6743. That's 888-994-6743. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Jeff Currier about tiger fish in Tanzania. If you'd like to ask Jeff a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and send us your question. Use that Q&A text box there, and we'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, we also had some questions about equipment. What did you take for rods, weight, size, and so forth?
Well, I brought probably more than I needed to. I brought 6 through 10.
But you always lose one, don't you, Jeff? Don't you always lose one over by the boat or something?
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's right, the Egypt story. That was ugly. I used about, lose about one a year, and I had already lost it this year back on Quake Lake back in July. I wasn't too worried. But I used a 9-weight most of the time on this trip. In fact, I was using my Ross rods, which I love very much because you can't break them, and they cast well. And these fish like to break rods because they are so violent at the side of the boat. You know, you're trying to get them in, and they seem like they're all happy, and they're just going to let you go down and tail them or bogo them, and all of a sudden they go ballistic, and that's a real easy time to break a rod. But 9 was the best because you're throwing sinking lines. I'm sure we'll get to that in a second. And the fish are big, so you need a rod with some backbone so you can put them down and get them to the boat. 10 weight would probably be even better when you hook the 15-pound plus, but you don't get that many of those, and, you know, you tire yourself out because you're casting all day when you're tiger fishing.
We have a question from Kevin in Wilson, Wyoming. He says, I just wanted to know what size harpoon Jeff used to get that thing. He's talking about the picture on our website. Either that or he suckered it in into beaching itself. Just kidding. Would like to know how you rig up for something like that. So you just mentioned the sinking line. So walk us through your line setup on this.
Okay. Well,
and,
on a 9
leader and tippet and so forth, you know.
Sure. From starting with the backing, I use 30-pound Dacron, and I'll bimini twist that. And so it's a bimini loop, and I'll loop that to the loop on the butt of my fly line, which I use on this trip. I was using sinking lines most of the time, and I'm a reel guy. I love the reel fly lines, and I was using what they call their deep sea lines, which, you know, you think that's only going to be good in the ocean, but it is perfect for fishing the jungles of Africa and South America because it can handle the heat. Big mistake people make is they try to take a shortcut on fly lines because, you know, what are they, $70 a piece these days? And you take a line that's built for cold weather, and you take it to where I just was, and you are in trouble because it will wilt on you. It'll sag on you. It'll just cast so soft that you won't be able to get your fly out there, and they also will twist up really bad. So it's essential you get one of the tropic lines. We use 250 grain, 300 grain, and 350 grains of the Rio deep sea lines, and they were absolutely perfect. The deeper you got your fly, or the closer to the bottom, whether it was a, you know, 6-foot deep pool or a 12-foot deep pool, the better chance you had at a big fish. So, real deep pools, 350 grain, get the fly down there as fast as possible, and try and get it to a big fish before a little fish eats it. Leader wise, that's you could go with 20-pound, and that's probably the best thing if you're going to fight fish in your backing most of the time, because if you use too heavy a leader and tippet and you fight a fish a lot while you're in your backing, you could break in your backing and lose your fly line and everything. But we really concentrated on not letting these fish run very much because there's tons of wood in both rivers. I described the rivers to you earlier, but I forgot to say that there's broken stumps and trees sticking up everywhere. So these tigers, they want to take off, and you have to stop them. In fact, you'll see me in the movie. I just look like a crazy man. Fish takes my fly, I let him take about 3 feet, and then I just clamp up on him and use the bend of the rod to keep him from breaking me off. But we also use straight 30-pound test, which is difficult for any fish to break off, especially if it's a 40-foot cast because there's so much stress, like he's attached to a bungee cord. So we beat him fast, and attached to that 30-pound monofilament leader, which I just went straight saltwater tippet from reel, 30-pound, I tied on the 40-pound knotable reel wire. And that's, when I say knotable, you can do a blood knot if you want, or you can do a surgeon's knot, and that's what I prefer to do, is just a double surgeon from my 30-pound to the 40-pound, and then I do a loop knot to my fly.
And that was plenty good for the shock tippet, and no bite-throughs there, right?
I did not, this whole trip, did not break off a fish or lose a fish because of tippet breaking or a bag knot, which is, that's kind of a miracle. What happened, though, is I did get injured a few times. I don't like to wear a finger sock or tape up my hands. I like to get the feel. And that first hour, the first day, I was mentally unprepared for how strong these fish really were. And I got line burns that I haven't had since I've been, my last time I was fishing Trevally or something. I mean, I was just looking at my hands that night, watching the blood drip out of them, going, oh my God, these fish are unbelievable. I'm just starting to heal up. I mean, because it was like that the whole week. So you really clamped down, tried not to let the line slide. Of course, when you hook a 15-pounder, the line slips away a little bit.
So that's something to put on the checklist is gloves.
If you can handle them. You know, yeah. I can't handle them, but if you can.
Oh, so you just didn't wear them at all then, the whole trip. Yeah.
No, I just bleed with the fish.
You're stubborn. You're stubborn, aren't you? Well, good, good. Well, that's a good rundown on that. So pretty straightforward, just strong stuff all the way down to the end. Don't let them get the best of you there. That's good. That's good. Well, let's talk a bit about, you know, your strategies and tactics. And first of all, you know, where did you look for fish?
Well, anywhere there was a deep pool with a sunken tree. And to be quite honest with you, very similar to the way you would float down a river and look for brown trout. You know, as soon as you saw a big sunken tree or a log sticking out close to the bank, your heart starts beating and you make your best cast. And when you're stripping, you're expecting a bite, and that's pretty much the way it was with these tiger fish. You could kind of sit back when there was no structure on the bank, and as we pulled or drifted along, kind of chill out for a second, and then as soon as that sunken tree came, you got your game face on and made the best cast you could. You let the fly sink and, you know, in towards the tree, and just when you thought your fly might get hung up on the tree, you started stripping. And the strip, let me tell you, for tiger fish, Tanzanian tiger fish, you strip very, very fast. And you're tired halfway through the day because you're stripping as fast as you can. But the faster you strip, the better, not only of getting the fish to strike your fly, but also if you're in the middle of a big, huge, fast strip and the fish grabs your fly, you're more likely to hook them as well. Which, you know, I'm just going to add something. We're talking about Tanzania, but the fish on the Zambezi and the Okavango Delta were totally different. There was more like you cast in the bank, and you let your fly swing, and then you let it dangle behind the boat, and a lot of times you get your strikes there. So, undoubtedly...
Fishing for muskie.
Yeah, undoubtedly, yeah. These were different than other tiger fish.
And did they hit it hard?
Incredibly hard. I mean, it was shocking. And sometimes they hit it... You know, I mentioned trying to get the fly down to the bottom, and that's where the big guys were, but sometimes your fly would hit the water, and before you made your first strip, you'd have an 8-pounder on. And those are the guys that would burn your fingers because, you know, you let that line slide when you're casting, and then you're trying to get your finger up to clamp on the line to start fishing, and if they hit it right when you're about to get your grip, oh, boy, painful.
How many days did you actually fish?
6 days.
6 days. And is that a normal week for fishing over there if a person was to go with these guys from South Africa?
Yeah, that is a normal week. I believe it's a half day on both ends and 4 full days in between. Oh, no, 5 full days in between.
I forgot to ask you, too, before. How did you get there? What was your travel path?
I drove up to Bozeman because, you know, the Confluence team wanted to all fly together. And then we flew to Minneapolis and then to Amsterdam and then down to Dar es Salaam. And we kind of got oriented there. We actually went out to Zanzibar, the island, for a day. And then we went back in Dar es Salaam, and it was about an hour and a half flight into camp. We landed at some just remote airstrip and got picked up in jeeps and drove an hour to camp.
How many hours travel?
Well, I had to overnight in Bozeman, so it ended up being about almost 50, 55 hours for me. But on the way home was pretty quick. I think our flight time was about 28 hours, and then I had my drive home from Bozeman. No big deal.
28 hours.
Layovers that kill you.
Yeah.
Long layover in Minneapolis on the way there and a long layover in Amsterdam on the way there, but the way back, everything was pretty quick.
Question from Rod in Amarillo on the Internet here. He wants to know, how much would a two-week stay cost or 1 week? What are the guys charging over there?
I think their trip is about $5,900. It's almost a $6,000 trip. And your airfare is going to run you between $1,400 and $1,800, depending how good a shopper you are. So it is not a cheap trip. And it's only going to get worse because one of the problems in Africa is, you know, when the government of these countries finds out you're doing well with your program, they want more. And then the price goes up, then they want more, and the price goes up. The other thing, might I add, is these guys are only taking 4 people a week for 19 weeks. So there's not a lot of people getting into this camp. They rotate their water incredibly well. They don't want it overfished. So that keeps the price high, too. Is it worth it? You're darn right. Boy, is it worth it.
Yeah. Another question on the Internet here, Joe in Driggs, Idaho. He says, can you give some insight as to how the local people view foreigners and fly fishing in general? Did you draw crowds?
You know, there was very few people where we were. That's how remote it was. There was one day on the Ruji River that we went upstream for 5 hours in the boats. We left at about 4:30 in the morning. You know, it was just barely light and drove all the way till about 10 or 11 in the morning. And we went through a village. And the people were super nice. They were definitely amused by us. They ran down to the banks, and they probably hadn't seen too many boats. I know Rob has been up there only 3 times in his life exploring. So they see very few boats, but they all came down and waved. They were just excited to have a little different sighting in their day, I guess. And there, we did fish through that village. We went about maybe 5 miles above it, and we drifted down, and we started getting in the village, and the kids did stand and watch. Now, not along the bank. they know about the crocodiles and the hippos. They all stood a good 15, 20 feet back, but they were in groups watching us fly fish. And I would swear that I landed about a 10-pound tiger in front of this big group of kids, and there were some ladies, probably moms, kind of doing some stuff off to the side. And one of the moms started yelling to the kids when I was letting this fish go. And I would guess that she was probably saying, next time you catch this one, tell them to give it to us.
Yeah.
No, their language barrier versus our language barrier, these kids were going to have none of that. It just wasn't worth their time. They just said, yeah. Well, we have enough food. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. The boats that you used, were the boats there, or did these guides bring in boats, or and what kind of boats?
They brought them in a couple years ago when they first discovered the place, which is quite a story. They actually brought their boats in on a train. And in the off-season, they store them in Dar es Salaam. They have a big warehouse where they store their tents and everything. And they're basically just 16-foot aluminum boats. Two guys can cast at the same time. You got to be careful. They got to be decent casters, but it's not too much of a problem. There's the person in the front gets to fish out of the bow, but it's a little tippy. It took me about a day and a half to get used to casting off the bow, get rid of the sea legs, but they're excellent. And they're perfect for those rivers because they can go through shallow water and they could probably take a pretty good punch from a hippo.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Were there any special techniques you used for presentation purposes other than what you described before? You said you didn't try any top water at all, right?
No, we didn't. We were told it worked, but we would get small fish, so we didn't really play around with it. It was something I wanted to do, but, we didn't get our big fish till the last day, so we didn't have a lot of time for experimenting. We were really after a big fish, and, we got a few, but one particularly big. Presentation-wise, I'd have to just say there wasn't a whole lot to it. Maybe cast your fly, quarter it downstream, and get it as close to the structure as possible. And then that fast strip, those were the three key things. If you did that, you were going to catch fish.
So pretty much the tiger fish is a ambushing kind of fish?
Definitely, yeah.
Kind of like a pike or a muskie?
Yep. Like most true predators, they're hiding, waiting for the dummies to swim in front of them.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and finish up here with tiger fish in Tanzania. Keeney's Fly Shop in Sacramento, California, features classes on all aspects of fly fishing. They have an extensive inventory and fly tying department, and a friendly, experienced staff whose primary goal is your complete satisfaction. Among their many services, one can book private waters and take advantage of their international travel service. Visit their extensive website at www.keeney.com. That's K-I-E-N-E.com, keeney.com. Or call them at 1-800-400-0359. That's 1-800-400-0359. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Jeff Currier about tiger fish in Tanzania. If you would like to ask Jeff a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay, Jeff, did you have any real surprises when you were out there, things you didn't expect?
You won't believe it coming from me, but no. It was where I was in the boonies of Africa, and it was one of the tamer trips, I'd have to say, as far as crazy wildlife or anything. The first night I had an elephant. We had our own tents, and I was the furthest away tent. It was kind of funny because, we're the wimpy Americans. Everybody was kind of fighting for the closest tent, and I lost, so I ended up way on the far edge of camp. And I woke up to trees breaking and bushes getting munched. It was part of my dream for probably the first 15 minutes that this guy was outside my tent, and then my eyes bulged out of my head, and I said, that is not a dream. And I frantically for my headlamp, and I was pretty sure it was going to be an elephant, but I really was a little bit shocked that he was less than 10 feet away. I mean, when I shined the light, his big white ivory tusk glistened about 8 feet from my head. I just couldn't believe it. But elephants are pretty cool, and they are really good about not stepping on a tent or kicking a rope or anything. They have good eyesight, good senses, and they just go about their business, and if you don't mess with them, they don't mess with you. So it was actually really enjoyable to sit there and watch this animal so close for about 15 minutes at 3 in the morning.
Hmm.
There's some spiders there that would make hair stand up in the back of most people's neck, but they're not very poisonous. They could give you a bite, but for the most part, they want to get away from you, so you don't worry about them. We did have a baboon spider in the South African tent, and we were lucky that we were able to see it. It was so big, it was like wildlife. And they very carefully caught it and released it outside. I thought it was kind of cool.
What was a day like there? You know, starting, kind of describe your whole day from when you started.
4:45.
4:45.
That's when the guys would come by to wake us up. And I'm not a big sleeper, so I was usually already awake, just laying there kind of waiting for the coffee to be ready. We'd crank down some coffee, maybe a quick breakfast if we had time, and we were in the boat before the sun rose every single day, all 6 days, moving to where we were going to fish or already fishing in some cases. And we would fish hard all day long if it was happening. We did have a couple days where there was great fish until about 9 in the morning, and then it died. So we probably pummeled the water till about 1, and then we took a 2-hour break, you know, just crawled up into the trees, had a nice lunch, and maybe laid down for 20 minutes. Then we got back out there till dark. Everybody on this trip was very hardcore. The South Africans fished with me. They didn't just guide, but they'll be part of the film, and those guys fish from sunrise to sunset just like me, so it was a perfect match. And Jim Klug and Chris Patterson and that friend of theirs who was a great guy, Jim Harris, came along. Those guys were just unbelievable. Patterson kept that camera at his face from sunrise to sunset like I kept casting the rod, and the other two guys were the still photographers and helped Chris when necessary. And we had quite a team over there, and that's why we came home with a really good movie.
So there was four of you then on the film team?
That's right.
And you were the only, the primary fly fisherman? Everybody.
I was the primary American guy, but all three of the African guys will be a big part of the movie. It, you know, really what it's kind of a story is about, you know, I've been to Africa a few times and seeking the big tiger fish, and I've caught some good ones, but I've never really caught the giant. But these guys I meet, which I did meet, and they took me to where the giants live, and they helped me get my giant tiger, and my big fish was 18 pounds.
Outstanding, yeah. Just got a question in from the internet here. Richard in New York says, when fighting tigers, most anglers keep the rod tip down even under the water with as much line underwater as possible. That keeps tension on the line when they jump. Fighting tarpon, most anglers bow to jumping fish. What's your favorite strategy of these two?
Well, normally with tiger fish, I would do like this gentleman said. I would keep my rod tip down low and I'd stay tight because their mouth is so hard. If you give them a lot of slack, the fly is probably going to come out. But that's a kind of a thing you do with fish up to about 15 pounds. When they start getting close to 20 pounds, you may have to give them a little line. And these guys, it wasn't a full-blown bow by any means like I would do for a tarpon or a sailfish. But I made sure that if he was jumping away from me, I went with him. I tried to keep my fly from getting too loose in his mouth. Kind of the happy medium between bowing and keeping that rod tip down. So my rod tip was halfway up. I was kind of ready to lean forward with the fish if I had to.
Okay, yeah. And that was the question Martin Coleman had, Lawrence, Kansas. He said, when they go airborne, how do you keep that hook in their mouth? So you're trying to keep that line as taut as reasonable, I guess it sounds like, huh?
Yep, as reasonable. And unfortunately, sometimes that fly would come flying back at you and you just smile and make another cast. Check your hook.
What kind of percentage, you know, loss did you have on hookups?
I mean,
how many fish did you get on, and how many fish did you land?
As far as strikes go, I'd say we probably got less than half. But once a fish was hooked, I would have to say we probably landed 75% of them. Mm-hmm. So once you got them on, you had a pretty good shot of getting them. But, boy, you get a lot of strikes that you don't hook at all.
A lot of misses, huh? 50-50?
Yep.
Yeah. That tells you there's a lot of fish in there if you were catching 40, 50 fish a day. Yeah.
Yep, these fish are, there's a lot of fish in there. Boy, a lot of fish.
Another question on the internet came in here. Rod in Amarillo again asks, he said, you mentioned Ross rods. Which one did you use in Africa? All my reels are Ross reels, but I've never fished a Ross rod. How good are they?
They're very good. I really like them. I'll be honest with you, I was skeptical because I've used high-end rods for the last 25 years, but the Ross guys were nice enough to put some in my hands, and you know, I kind of took them with me and used them on occasion, and it took me about one trip to realize that, hey, these things are pretty darn good, and, you know, I really like them. And for me, the nice thing about them is I do feel comfortable going 8,000 miles from home because I know they're not going to break. I mean, any rod can break, and I have broke one Ross. in the last 5 years, but they're reliable, and reliable is what you need when you travel and fly fish.
He had asked specifically, was there a particular model that you used?
I used the FCs.
FCs?
I used all of them, but that is one that I happen to have the most of, and it's really good. That's their high-end, and it's, believe it or not, only about $220 retail.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah, that's very nicely priced compared to the other high-ends. Yeah, yeah. So are they similar to TFOs in pricing and performance?
They are similar. I think they're better.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Say that, but they're good. I
yeah. Good, good. Is there any other stories you want to tell or things that I haven't asked that we need to talk about?
Well, think about that. I think we're covering it pretty good here. If something comes to me, I'll definitely throw it out there.
Okay. We did get a question in here from David in Columbus, Ohio, and he's asking about trip planning. He said, I'd love to plan a fly fishing trip outside the U.S., and fly fishing for tiger fish in Tanzania sounds great. How does one start to plan for such a trip, and what pointers can you give me so that I can get started off on the right foot? Also, when planning a trip outside the U.S., how do you know that the people you are talking to, either via phone, email, or whatever, are not just going to take your money, and when you get there, you will be stuck? That's my biggest fear about planning a trip outside the USA.
Well, you know, if you're going to deal with people overseas, that's a possibility. I've heard horror stories like that. Fortunately for myself, I've never had one of those horror stories. We're lucky here. My advice to him would be to go to someone like Yellow Dog Outfitters. That's who did all of our trip this time. And Yellow Dog Outfitters, they will take the responsibility for contacting the outfit in a foreign country. They will deal with all the emails and phone calls so you don't have to do with it. And they will even do your airfare for you and make sure when you get all the way to Dar es Salaam, somebody's standing there with a sign that has your name on it. That's the way you do your first trip. You don't go off and do some crazy exploratory thing like I've done in the past. And it's not just for Africa. I think if you're going to Belize or Mexico, you know, use an outfit like Yellow Dog the first time. You'll be comfortable, you'll be happy, and you won't have to worry about losing that money. And, you know, a lot of people, I've been spoiled the last few years, but a lot of people, they're doing a trip like, you know, Belize or a trip like I just did once in their lifetime, so you might as well do it right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I suppose, you know, definitely get, you know, word-of-mouth referrals from people that have gone with that particular group, or whether it be the travel service like Yellow Dog or a lodge. Just don't pick one out of the blue. Make sure you've talked to somebody that's been there, right?
Yeah, references are very important. And I'll throw this out there, too. If he's really ready to leave the USA, I'm still looking for one more person to go in my group to Brazil in March. So
there you go.
Go. We've got a lot of fun people on it. And if he wants to catch peacock bass, we're ready.
And that's what you're after?
Yeah, that'll be a peacock trip for the most part, but there's a lot of other cool fish that, you know, I'm out there chasing down.
Yeah, are there any arowanas down there?
That's one of my favorites. I always bring my 6-weight and some great big Chernobyl ants, and, you know, I'll go play around where the arowanas live. I love that fish.
Oh, I do too. I've had them as kids in an aquarium, and, you know, it's
that's
a cool
right.
fish. It's just, you know, one step cooler than a tarpon, as far as I'm concerned. You know, that ancient look of prehistoric type fish. Yeah,
it's
definitely a cool fish. Yeah. Well, good. Well, I think we've about covered it tonight, and so we'll wrap things up here. Stick with us, folks. We're going to be giving away our 1-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine. And also, we're going to give away that pair of Rail Riders Extreme Adventure Pants. And that is definitely something you want to win. Just great, great clothing that I've been purchasing and wearing recently as well. So hang tight with us, and we'll be right back. Bristol Bay region of southwest Alaska is home to the largest ruins of wild salmon on the planet and some of the best trophy rainbow trout fishing found anywhere. The Pebble Mine still remains a threat to the region, and 2 million acres of federal lands may also be at risk. The entire fly fishing industry has united in this epic conservation battle. Anglers from across the country are joining the fight. Be one of them. Visit www.savebristolbay.org. That's savebristolbay.org. And there you can learn more about how you can get involved. Well, just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave our website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on your homepage in the section on tonight's show that says, what did you think of the show? Just click on that link and leave your comments. Now it's time to give away our prizes. And the winners of our drawings tonight are randomly selected from the show's registration database. And to be in that, you will have had to have registered already. It's a little late now, but make sure you register the next time so that you have a chance at some of these great gifts we have to give away. So we will do our random drawing here. And let's see, for our one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, we have, winner is Don Ribergard in California. So, Don, congratulations on that membership. If you already have one, we'll get it extended for you, and I know you'll enjoy it. Federation's a great organization to support. And if other people want to find out about Fed Fly Fishers, go to fedflyfishers.org, fedflyfishers.org, and you can find out about the organization, what they do, and how they help our whole industry as far as fly fishing goes. And then we also will give away here a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine, great magazine out of Calgary, Canada, and lots of great articles, great photography, and something that you'll really enjoy. And our winner there is John Orter, John Orter in Illinois. So, John, congratulations on that. We'll be sending you both gentlemen emails on how you can request for your information so that we can get these memberships and subscriptions out to you. Now we have the Rail Riders Extreme Adventure Pants, courtesy of Rail Riders. These are the toughest pair of fly fishing pants on the market. They're lightweight, synthetic, and super tough, reinforced seats and knees, good pocket design and articulated knees, Velcro and elastic cuffs, great under waders, and great wet wading pants. So, the person, we need to ask a question here, and Jeff, make sure I get this one right so that I get the right answer here, but what was the name of the fish that was the primary food source for the tiger fish? Primary food source that Jeff mentioned for the tiger fish. So the first person that types that in on our homepage, gives us a name and a location, it's going to get a nice pair of pants. Well, maybe it was too hard, Jeff.
I think it might be a tough one.
Well, this is a good prize. I'm not going to give it away lightly. This one was Shiners. That wasn't it, was it, Jeff?
Close. Oh, so close.
Oh, here we might have it. How about Red Barb, Jeff? Is that a good answer?
That's legit. Redfin Barb is the exact name, but I think that's close enough.
Okay, so Richard in New York. Richard in New York, you just got yourself a really nice pair of Extreme Adventure pants. So be sure and, Richard, send in, I need your first and last name, your address, contact information, phone number, email address. Send that in the same box that you just answered the question, and then we'll get you connected so that we can get you that pair of pants, need to find sizes and so forth. So congratulations. That's a really great prize you got, and I know you'll like them. So. Well, Jeff, hey, appreciate you being on the show again with us. I think you've done more interviews than anybody else, but you always have something interesting to talk about, so it's always fun. So
fun,
thanks so
here.
Much for being with us.
Glad to be here. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, be safe out there, okay? At least this time you didn't hurt yourself too bad, huh?
No tigers, no lions, no bad animals this time. Everything was cool.
good for you. Well, take care and stay warm up there in the North Country, and we'll talk to you again soon, I'm sure.
All right. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
All right. Our next broadcast will be on December 1st, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and on that show we'll interview Skip Morris, and our topic for the show will be largemouth bass and bugs. Skip Morris will share his secrets of finding and catching big largemouth bass as well as tips on tying bass, bugs, and flies. We'd also like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, Rail Riders, Royal Gorge Anglers, Platte River Fly Shop, and Keeney's Fly Shop for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. That's 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. And we'll be happy to explain the options available to you. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.